This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. It's 7:33. The 2014 regular legislative session began in January amidst surprising and unprecedented circumstances caused by the water crisis. It ended Saturday at midnight with unanimous votes to protect water resources. But a lot happened in between. My colleagues watched it all. Joining us this morning is Ashton Mara, who reported from the Senate, and Aaron Payne, reporting from the House. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
All right. So, Aaron, let's begin with you. A lot about water, not just protecting water resources, but there were other water issues as well.
That's right. And when Senate Bill 373, which was aimed at protecting water resources and regulating above-ground tanks, passed the Senate, the House added a lot to that as far as protecting water and protecting citizens after the spill. That included adding medical monitoring. When it came back to the Senate for approval, there was some questions as to if the Senate would remove all the extra.
That's right. Well, that the House had put in.
Mm-hmm. But not so much. The amendment to the House amendment kept in line with above-ground storage tanks, adding swimming pools are not above-ground storage tanks. Also, there was an amendment addressing a particular amendment from the House, Senator Unger's floor amendment requiring individual NPDES permits in certain circumstances in the zone of critical concern, removed exemptions from the House amendment. The fear was to keep the program funded. So that bill passed unanimously. It was sent back to the House and again passed unanimously. Mm-hmm. There was a water amendment, Senate Joint Resolution 12, that would put in the Constitution that would protect the water for West Virginia citizens. There were some questions as to what that actually meant or what that would actually entail. Concerns on the House side was on the laws pertaining to water resource. There's about three cases pending, according to opponents of the resolution, involving rights to water for private owners and businesses. And the fear was if this amendment was put into the Constitution that it would limit rights in the future. Delegate Tim Armstead opposed the resolution for this reason. This is what he had to say.
There will be, I'm sure, changes in additional rights that perhaps people might have, additional uses that might be developed for water. And for us to somehow say that we're going to put a stake in the ground here, and this is, if you're an individual, you've got what rights we're telling you you've got now, but forget it if it comes to any other rights.
On the other hand, supporters of the constitutional amendment mentioned property rights were addressed in the state constitution. Delegate Stephen Skinner wanted to make sure that water was added to something that is protected in the Constitution.
Let's also put that value in our Constitution alongside real property. Let's put water as something that is critical to West Virginia.
However, the resolution was rejected by a vote of 43-53.
And won't be on the 2014 ballot.
That's right.
In November. Ashton, let's talk about this abortion bill.
So we started out in the Senate in the same way we started with water. They presented a resolution to Dr. Rahul Gupta of the Kanawha Charleston Health Department for his work following the session. But it was at the end, I'm sorry, following the water crisis. But it was at the end of that first session that we saw our big controversial issue, like you said, House Bill 4588, the Pain Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. The bill, as it came out of the House, prohibits abortions after 20 weeks. But Senate Judiciary Chair Corey Palumbo has been outspoken that courts around the country have ruled a prohibition before 24 weeks mm-hmm. or medical viability is unconstitutional. His 24-week amendment, however, has never gained enough support in the chamber. Senator Eric Wells attempted a filibuster of sorts, requesting the Senate clerk read all of the bills up for a vote in their entirety. The move was an attempt to block the abortion bill, which was up for passage. Wells was thwarted by the Rules Committee, which voted to move the bill to the top of the order. His second attempt, Wells said, would have come in a speech before the vote, when he planned to read the entire Supreme Court decision on Roe versus Wade, the 1970s case calling state bans on abortion unconstitutional. That, however, was also blocked, and there was no debate permitted before the vote. The bill passed with a vote of 25-9 after Wells stood to speak to the bill and his disappointment in the decision.
It seems to me the worst thing about politics today is the degree of how special interests really do play a part. You got to make sure that the right checkbox is checked, whether it's NRA, whether it's labor or business or pro-life, pro-choice. That's why West Virginia, in my mind, is 50th. Instead of really bearing down on the issues at hand, whether it be poverty in West Virginia, education system in West Virginia, but instead we want to focus on gays, abortion, guns, and I just kind of wonder when that's going to change.
Beth, it's also important to note that the governor has not yet said that he will sign that bill.
And some wage issues during this session, both minimum wage and teacher pay, which kind of went up and down and up and down and up and down throughout the 60 days. Aaron, where do we start with minimum wage?
With minimum wage, it was House Bill 4283. The Senate proposed an amendment that would change the increase from a two-year 75 cent each to 25, 50, and 75 over the course of 3 years. But the House refused to concur with the Senate amendments, which would increase the minimum wage. So the Senate decided to recede from its amendment and accept the House's 75-75. But Senator Mitch Carmichael asked Senator Bill Laird if the House version cooperated with testimony that they heard from businesses while working on the bill.
The feeling was, particularly as it affects jobs and employment here in West Virginia, that at the 25 level, that not many jobs would necessarily be eliminated, and it would help those at the minimum levels. But at 75, it became onerous. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So the minimum wage bill passed, as did the teacher pay raise bill. They're on their way to the governor. Ashton, one bill that failed was the pseudoephedrine bill by prescription only.
A very, very watched bill this session. That bill came from Senator Greg Tucker of Nicholas County. He backed the idea that if you make the drug available only through a prescription, you'll drastically reduce the amount of meth labs, which is a major problem across the state. After passing a House committee who amended the bill, removing the prescription-only provision, it also cut in half the amount a person could buy each year and created a meth offender registry. On the floor in the House, the bill changed back to prescription only, but called for elections of the people to decide how it would be handled in their county. The bill went to conference committee late on Saturday night, and the agreement was made that the elections would remain, but if the pharmaceutical industry stopped funding NPLEX, the national system that tracks pseudoephedrine purchases across state lines, then the drug would automatically become prescription only in those counties. The agreed amendments needed to make it to the respective clerk's desks by 9 p.m. Saturday. The Senate's was stamped at 8:57. The House's, however, did not, and the bill died in the final hours. This is what Senator Tucker had to say after the session.
How much does that add to the net expense for the teacher pay raise?
$4.5 million.
Sorry, that was Senator Carmichael. This is what Tucker had to say.
So now it's a total of $39 million or...
We're having some technical difficulties with
Tucker
that bite.
Tucker said that he would try again next year and that he expects that number of meth labs to grow over the course of the year.
And the Future Fund. Now, the bill passed creating the Future Fund. However, the constitutional amendment that would allow voters to decide how this money would be spent failed. So that will not be on the 2014 general election ballot either. Ashton Mara from the Senate, Aaron Payne from the House, excellent work all session long, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:42. Partly sunny and breezy today. Temperatures will be in the 50s and 60s. Gusts of up to 40 miles per hour are possible in the eastern counties. Becoming partly cloudy overnight with lows in the 30s and 40s. Partly sunny on tomorrow with temperatures in the 50s and 60s. A new crawdad species has been discovered in West Virginia, Camberus hatfieldi, from the Tug Fork River Basin. It's actually one of three new crayfish species that's recently been discovered and named. Glennis Board spoke with the researcher behind the discoveries and brings us this lesson on crayfish.
Under the pond.
Oh my, what is that?
This is called the bottle brush crayfish. It's native to the Green River in Kentucky, and it's one of the top two largest species of crayfish in West Virginia.
Okay.
Or not in West Virginia, in Kentucky, that's wrong.
Okay.
So he's a big guy.
Zachary Loafman is a professor of biology at West Liberty University and one of about nine crayfish biologists in the country. He just pulled what looks to me like a small green lobster out of an aquarium. It's big. Its claws outstretched reach at least a foot wide. And this is no fish story. This is a crawdad story.
If you would have told me when I was here at West Liberty as a student that I'd be naming new species in West Virginia, I would have looked at you like you were a crazy person. I never in a million years saw this avenue actually come into light.
Get him talking about crawdads, and you'll see what raw, genuine enthusiasm looks like.
Any second of any day, I will look for crayfish. Period.
Yeah. Spend enough time with Loafman, and you might start to love crawdads, too.
My field crews, they laugh because we normally get up in the morning, we're out looking for the crayfish. We stop, eat lunch, maybe, keep looking for the crayfish, eat dinner, and then most of the time we don't want to sit and just stare at each other, so we go back out with our headlamps on and keep looking for crayfish. So it's pretty much in the summertime, when we're out doing the field work, it's perpetual.
That diligence is certainly yielding returns. His latest crawdad species has been dubbed Camberus hatfieldi, after the famous feuding family, because it's found in Mate Creek, the same creek on which the Hatfields' homestead was built. Loafman has been studying crayfish for about a decade. He says he chose crayfish because, well, no one else really has. A lot about crayfish is shrouded in mystery, from simple things like, how long do they live? To more complicated queries like, how do they raise their young? Loafman says all that mystery makes the job very exciting. Nothing but discoveries.
We definitely found out that they aren't little robots. They all kind of do their own thing. We had some animals that spent an entire month and a half underneath one rock. We actually thought maybe they're dead under there. And at the end of the study, we flipped the rock and there he is, you know, waving his claws at us. We had other animals that we put the transmitters on. And every single night, they moved half a football field up and down the stream. We had one animal that would go from the head of a riffle down to the bottom of a riffle, you know, over the course of a night, and then go back to the head of the riffle the next night, and then go back to the bottom of the riffle. We had absolutely no biological explanation for that, but, you know, he did it. So they're quirky, and that's one of the things that I absolutely love the most about them.
Today, you can find more than 60 crawdads living in a variety of aquariums in Loafman's West Liberty Lab. And so many more pickled and cataloged. It's crazy. And for all we don't know about them, we do know that they are the third most endangered animal group in the country.
There's a species in the coal fields right now called the big sandy crayfish. And in the late 80s, it was known from 17 streams. And we've spent a tremendous amount of time in the coal fields looking for this animal. And it is now only known from 3 streams.
Oh, wow.
So it's definitely on its way out.
Loafman is super passionate about natural history and conservation.
We now know the number one threat to crayfish across West Virginia, and that's sedimentation.
Loafman says not finding crayfish in a stream is a pretty good indicator that something, or more likely someone, has disturbed the ground in the watershed around the stream, causing sediment to clog all the little spaces between the rocks where crayfish like to chill.
If you do anything to the floodplain or the habitat, the hillside, up from a stream, it's going to basically result in a lot of sediment getting into the creek.
Loafman goes on to explain that while they are still working to discover all the roles that crayfish play in stream ecologies, one key role is creating avenues by which many other stream dwellers move about.
So when the crayfish go away, you see this net cascade loss of diversity because all the animals that are kind of dependent on them slowly but surely phase out too.
In addition to habitat disruption and stream sedimentation, Loefman says invasive species often introduced by fishermen are another big threat to crayfish.
All it takes, it's been proven in other states, is one person repeatedly bringing crayfish from one stream to another stream.
Loefman says when folks use crayfish as bait, it's really, really important to the ecology of the stream for them not to drop their living leftover crawdads into the stream if the crayfish came from somewhere else. Apparently, it's a pretty competitive world in crawdad land, and we can really mess up the balance of power by flinging crayfish about. So if we leave you with anything to remember from this report, it's this.
If you're fishing in Wheeling Creek, get your bait from Wheeling Creek. Don't get your bait from Wheeling Creek and then drive over to the Potomac River and use that bait. And that is actually the absolute worst thing you can possibly do, because that's how we end up getting invasive crayfish.
Please tell all your fishing friends. Seriously. Thanks. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Board in Wheeling.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Good morning. I'm Beth Voorhees.